This is Calliope Writing Coach, the podcast about writing and publishing success from every angle. I'm Angie Fenimore, international best-selling author and writing coach.
And I'm Michael Sheen, author, platform designer, and marketing master. Episode 37, Interview with a Tour Editor. Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Calliope Writing Coach podcast. You've got Michael and Angie in the house.
Well, hey there. So, Michael, before you get started here, let's get an update.
An update.
An update.
An update on Scotland?
Scotland.
Okay.
I mean, it's getting close now to where you got to get your passport in order if you're coming.
Definitely, definitely. So, our writing retreat to a castle in Scotland.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
We rented the castle.
We rented the castle.
We did.
Yeah.
We said, we're going.
I think we've got two rooms left, and then the loft, which has four beds in it. We've got three of those beds left. And at this point, that loft is for females only. So,
okay.
Any single females.
Yes, but our person in the loft is thinking about moving to a room, which would mean it's still open for you guys. And, you know, that's what we'll do.
Yeah.
We'll offer her one of the rooms. But that's got to happen really, really fast because there's only two private rooms left.
Yep. So you want to go to CallliopeWritingRetreats.com and contact us there. You can check out the rooms. You can pick your room. And
Can we say a little bit about the rooms?
I guess.
Okay, so just a little bit of history about this castle. It was in the 1500s when it was built, and there was this huge war, basically, in this little area between the Catholics and the not Catholics, which took out the castle. But anyway, the new proprietor rebuilt the thing because it was taken out, rebuilt the whole thing, and then his daughter grew up in this castle. This is where they vacationed, and she grew up to be a world-class decorator. So she has gone in and made the thing like really comfortable too, and has maintained all those beautiful architectural things that you get with the castle. I mean, really has kept the integrity of the place, but there's whiskey in every room and tea, and these are just like beautifully,
if you're inclined to such things, yes.
Beautifully appointed. Plus, you get me and Michael the whole time.
Yeah, it's right? Going to be a good thing. Time for sure.
A good time. And plus, what are we doing, Michael?
Your writing will take on a whole new level.
Yeah, we are gonna draft a whole manuscript. Plus, we're gonna pitch to the top deal making agents in New York. That is what we're doing while we're there. So you're gonna walk away with a completed draft. Which is, you know, that's where we all get stopped, is in that draft. You get hung up. We're going to get all the way to the end. And you're going to have submission requests from top deal making agents or publishers, because that's how we roll. We're at 100%. Yeah. 100% for manuscript submission requests out of our pitch conferences. So this is it. This is
really, if you're serious about your writing and you want to take it to that next level, you're ready to go pro. This is a must-attend event. So,
Yeah, and I also want to say, you don't actually have to know anything about writing. We've got you.
Totally.
You don't have to worry about that part of it. Oh, but I just have an idea. Good. That's how we like to get you, with just an idea, because then you don't make all those newbie mistakes. And you're just really going to be on a clear path to author success.
For sure. All right. Today, we are super, super excited. I mean, Angie could not be more nervous if, like, Kevin Costner was in the building.
Oh, yeah. No, I am more nervous than if Kevin Costner was in the building.
Today, our special guest.
Yeah, because I'm a total fangirl here. Like, yeah, if you guys remember that episode.
You got to wait. Everybody out there wants to know who it is. They're like, who is it?
Who was it that you were totally, like, anyway. Tripping over yourself? Over.
Our special guest is Diana Foe. Welcome, Diana.
Yeah.
Hi. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for outing me. Hold on a minute. Thanks for outing me, Michael.
Now I'm like super curious. Like, do I have to go listen to some backlog matter and see what you're fangirling about? Like,
oh man, you have no idea. Yeah. So. We interviewed Chris Brogan, who is a longtime blogger and business author, and And
Michael had to tell me who he was on the podcast. I've read all of his books.
I'm
trying to pretend that I already know.
Yeah. And so that one I was geeking out about, but no, Angie is definitely geeking out about you, Diana. So for the rest of the world who may not know, Diana M. Foe is an editor at Tor Books and Tor.com Publishing. Though she's worked in the publishing industry under various hats for the past decade, she's also an academic scholar, an activist, performer, and general rabble-rouser elsewhere. Her talented list includes Robin Bennis, Alex Bledsoe, P. DeJelly Clark, Marie Cruz, Lara Elena Donnelly, Thorea Dyer, A.J. Hartley, Margaret Killjoy, Kari Marin, and Prentice Rollins. She also works with the best-selling The Wheel of Time series and George R.R. Martin's Wild Cards universe. Holy cow. And if that wasn't enough, in the steampunk community, she is best known for running Beyond Victoriana, an award-winning U.S.-based blog on multicultural steampunk. She has published numerous articles on science fiction and its community. She has been interviewed for many media outlets about fandom, including CBS's Inside Edition, MSN.com, BBC America, The Travel Channel, HGTV, The Science Channel, and now the award-winning Calliope Writing Coach podcast. Follow her on Tumblr at writersyndrome.tumblr.com and Twitter at writersyndrome. And we'll have links to those in our show notes. Diana, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, I'm very glad to be here.
This is so, so great. You lead a really cool life.
Wow. Well, I hope I do, you know?
Yeah, from the outside looking in, it sure looks like it to me. Mm-hmm.
I mean, holy cow. You get to hang out with some of the coolest authors in the business on a fairly regular basis, I'm guessing. And then...
Well, I'll tell you what I really love is that you're all into steampunk, but you're also into social justice. It's like, you're a girl after my own heart, I tell you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and supporting marginalized authors. We love that about you.
So, Diana, how did you get involved in the publishing industry?
Well, I actually didn't think about going into books when I was thinking about careers. I was an undergrad. I was an English-Russian double major. And at the time, when I was thinking about what to do after college, I was like, well, I could get a master's in English and, you know, possibly be a teacher. I could get a master's in Russian and then disappear out into the private sector. I kind of think, looking back, that like, wow, no regrets about not making the Russian choice, actually.
Yeah.
So I didn't actually think about going to publishing at all until I was just talking about options with my friends. And they're like, well, you know, why don't you think about going into publishing? And I thought, oh, yeah, because I was a voracious reader. I was a constant, like, bookworm. I lived in the library growing up. And so I just never thought about working with books as an option, weirdly enough. And I think actually a lot of people don't think about working in books as an option when they think about career choices with English majors, actually. Mm-hmm. But I did a bit of research and... I actually got some internships. You know, neither of them were in editorial, actually. I had marketing internships. I spent one summer at Kaplan Test Prep and Admissions, copy editing their test packets and grading student essays.
Oh, that sounds torturous.
Yeah, it was interesting, but it was also my first summer in New York, and that's when I absolutely fell in love with the city. And afterwards, I was like, all right, I have to go to publishing. I have to move to New York. It's now a priority. I can't imagine working in publishing anywhere else. And I also had a internship with John Wiley & Sons, also in marketing. And that experience combined with my degree actually really helped me out in my job search. And I was offered a job working in international sales and marketing, you know, after college at Hachette. So that was actually my first, you know, leap into publishing. And I have worked in various other companies and positions ever since. I've experienced, of course, in not only in sales and marketing, but also like in social media and blogging. I've made lots of catalogs during my career. Mm-hmm. And my leap from the sales side into editorial actually started with a short stint at the Science Fiction Book Club. So I was there for a little while. I had kind of like a quarter life crisis and I was like, is publishing all there is in the world? And so I went off and actually got my master's in performance studies.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, you know, I had this degree and my final project was actually studying the role of race and identity in steampunk performance. So,
Oh, interesting.
So like, so I like followed all these musicians, watched movies, analyzed like books, you know, went to all these conventions and you know, talked to cosplayers and all that stuff. And I really loved what I did. But afterwards I realized, yeah, I don't really want to be a professor. I have this master's. But it was really focused on what I really loved, which is really nerdy stuff. And I wanted to continue doing it. So thankfully, when my program ended, a spot opened up at Tor. And while I was in my master's, I was actually working with Tor.com as a blogger and social media manager. So when a full-time editorial spot opened up, I was considered, and I've been there ever since.
Mm.
So great.
Yeah, that's a pretty awesome place to land if you're going to get into publishing. You might as well, just, you know, end up at the top.
You know, and just, you know, who you are. And I mean, just even the things on your blog that are just kind of in that sidebar, you know, and I'm not sure if they go together or not, but Jewish, LGBTQQ literature, Muslim music, Muslim world, you know, like that. It's like, here's the thing is that books can change the world. They inform the way people think and books can reach millions. And so I just love that you ended up at Tor in editing as an acquisitions editor, because I can just see that you're so much more than, yeah, I don't want to offend any other editors out there, but you're so much more than any other editor I've ever met. Okay. And so I'm just like so thrilled that that was your choice.
Oh, thank you. And I think out of all of the businesses, I feel like publishing is the most open-minded when it comes to your personal background, what kind of education you had, what kind of interest you had before you decided to go into books, which is another reason why I really love the industry. Like, I've met people who had total career changes. Like, they used to be doctors or engineers, or they used to work in like nonprofits, and then suddenly they're like, no, I want to work with books. And then they just make mm-hmm. the leap. And that's part of the reason I really love the industry.
So great. So,
Diana, I was talking with one of my friends and I was mentioning that we had this interview with you today and they actually didn't know who Tor was. So I'm thinking,
this can't be a sci-fi fantasy, right?
No, definitely not. But I'm thinking that maybe we ought to introduce Tor to the rest of the world who may not know those three people out there.
Right, because our listeners.
What is Tor publishing and interested in?
Tor is one of the largest science fiction and fantasy publishers in the United States. It was founded by Tom Doherty, and you know, it's been around for over 35 years at this point. We publish many of the leading names in science fiction fantasy today, basically. So yeah. You know, including, you know, as you mentioned in my bio, the Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time series. We do George R. R. Martin's Wildcard series. We also publish Brandon Sanderson and John Scalzi and Elizabeth Baer and Nancy Kress. And, you know, basically any top sci-fi fantasy author within like the last 30 years can think of, they've had a book of us.
Yeah, thank you. All right.
Yeah, Michael and I'm hitting Michael. I'm like,
why?
Smacking him. I'm like, as if anybody doesn't know who Tor is. Anyway.
Well, I was surprised. But, like,
yeah,
I
no, was, no, no. I get it. Because yeah. Michael had to tell me who Chris Brogan was, which,
yeah, exactly.
You know, is cringy now. But Anyway, okay, so Diana, here's what I really want to know. I really want to just pick your brain. Like, what would you tell every writer out there? What do you look for in an author? What do you look for in a story?
Ultimately, I am looking for stories that, you know, interest me. And that's, I think, like, is the most vaguest answer I could ever give. Is it interesting? Do I like it? Is it compelling? Am I continuing to read it after, like, the first 30 pages? Essentially, for me, because every editor's taste is different, my tastes, they're definitely, in the realm of upmarket or commercial fiction. In terms of genre, of course, I do science fiction and fantasy for the most part. There's always outliers. It really depends to me on the story and the characters and the ideas behind it. And if it's intriguing enough, if it keeps me asking questions, if it helps me look at the world in a different way than I did before, if it's something that I think is important that other people should know more about that can only be expressed through storytelling form, like those are all aspects that really compel me to look at a project. So, mm-hmm. So like in line with that, that's why I'm very interested in looking at marginalized perspectives and people who are historically underrepresented in fiction, in the sort of storytelling, especially in genre.
Yeah. And, the interesting thing is you've very publicly stated that. Like, it's on your website, it's on your, on your bios everywhere of what exactly you're looking for. How many times do you get pitched something that's so far outside of what you're looking for?
Not as much as I had when I first started acquiring. So that's good. So that shows that people are doing the research and I'm getting the right message out there. And I think it's really interesting what I do see, because I also think that agents and authors, when they pitch at conferences, they really try hard to make sure that their project matches with my interests, because otherwise it'll just be a waste of time for both of us. And I think mm-hmm. that's really great. And I also think that sometimes, I get questions from people saying like, well, I have this story and it has these elements that, interests me. Like, is it something that you'd be into? And they would just automatically assume that something that is outside of, a certain like white Eurocentric straight framework would be in my game. And I think 90% of the time, I'm like, yeah, I think that might be. So why don't you send it over?
mm-hmm. So in being so public about what you're looking for, do you find that people try to maybe twist their story idea to match that persona just so that they can impress you?
Get an in?
Yeah.
And that, I think that's an interesting question, because I think that also is related to a question I often get on panels, which is, what trends do you see?
Mm-hmm. And writing to trends. Right.
And in that sense, I don't think people necessarily try to write for a particular editor for the reason that there's so many of us, that it's going to be pretty much impossible to be like, I'm going to write the perfect story for X editor.
Mm-hmm.
Because already it's very difficult for aspiring published writers to even get their story like on paper, But I do think that being so open about what I am looking for and being very clear that like, well, I would really love to support marginalized writers and stories that aren't often seen in the mainstream, it really gives a signal to those people who, have been out and felt excluded or ignored or erased.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, well, there's at least like one person out there who is specifically looking for me. And that would feel very reassuring, I think, to a lot of writers. I think a criticism that people who advocate for diversity get often is whether we are asking for quotas. Like, we're just asking for projects that need a bunch of checkboxes. Mm-hmm. And I think the assumption that comes with that is the idea that the projects that we're looking for wouldn't quote unquote be good if they didn't fill in these certain checkboxes. But the truth is that, there are stories out there that people are afraid to write, or they feel self-conscious about it, or they self-reject because they think that no one would accept their story because it seems so different than what they see in the majority of the marketplace.
I'm writing that word down, self-reject. That's so great. Yeah.
Yeah.
If we don't, as if we don't do enough of that, right?
Right, exactly. And like self-reject actually is a concept coined by Rose Lundberg. They are a trans Jewish writer, and they used it as a hashtag actually to describe, you know, that exact idea about how so many people think that they can't be writers or can't be creators, or at least can't sell their work because they think that no one would accept the type of story that they want to write. I don't think that's true at all.
No, not at all. That's what makes it interesting. You know, everyone wants to reinvent the wheel, you know, and tell a story differently rather than just doing what we've known for, you know, many, 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 like centuries about storytelling. Now, that's what makes it interesting, is this new character in this new setting, and including the author, because an author is a persona as well, a brand. But yeah, something I'd love to know is, can you address writing to a trend?
I don't believe that's a thing, actually. I know other people may have different opinions about the effectiveness about quote-unquote writing to a trend, because honestly, like, the stuff I'm buying now won't be published at least until 2020. And so if you're claiming to write to a trend, that means you can also, you know, see into the future to know what's trending 2 to 3 years
from now. Exactly. Yes. Very good. Yeah, that's what we tell people, is it's 2 years, you know, with what an editor is saying on their desk, it's right now is not what you're writing right now, for sure. Right. I just wanted a little validation there.
Yeah. So what we teach our authors is that there is a match for you and your writing, and it's eHarmony. And so, you know, you want to do your research. You want to find somebody. If you're writing about marginalized characters and you stumble on Diana's profile and she's looking for that, bam, there's a match, right? And, you know, but if that's not what you're writing, then there's somebody else out there who is interested in what you're writing, most likely. So I have a controversial question, Diana. Self-pub versus traditional. What's your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts is basically, like, right now we are in a period where authors have more choices than ever before about how they want to be published. Mm-hmm. And actually, one of the first questions I always ask a writer who wants to be published is, where do they see the trajectory of their career? And there is a difference between a writer who just wants books available in their local bookstore or regionally. There's a difference between that and a writer who, you know, knows that they just want to be a mid-list author and be consistently published, or someone who's like, yeah, I want to go for the New York Times bestseller list. Like, bam, that's all I want, you know? Yeah. And I think it's very important for writers to be realistic about where they see their writing career going, so they can adjust their own personal choices accordingly and how to get there. And I think self-publishing does offer an option for writers who want to be published a certain way to have that as an option when facilitating their career. Mm-hmm. I think before anyone, you know, should jump in to, like, you know, either traditional or self-pub, is to, like, be fully aware of all of the pros and cons and whether that really fits what kind of writing career and what kind of work lifestyle even that they want to have. Mm-hmm. I think too often, especially for self-pub, there was a while, you know, about like 5-6 years ago where, like, you know, self-publishing was seen as something that was super hot and easy to attain, quote unquote, but that's not true. For every self-published success, it's because they have a certain work ethic and style that fits their writing career and that they're able to push that. And I also know, like, a lot of authors make the assumption that if you self-publish, then all you have to do is click a button and then you're published and then people will come and find you. No, that's not true.
Yeah.
It's like, to be a successful self-published author includes doing all of your own marketing and publicity and outreach yourself, or you hire someone and pay them to do it for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's definitely a lot of work that I think can be worthwhile to the people who want to do it, but that's also why publishers are here. And that's, you know, what we do as well. Like, to be traditionally published by a good publisher is to be able to focus primarily on what you do best, which is writing, and being able to rely on a team that will help support you the rest of the way.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, that's great. And I think that goes right along with what we teach as well, is that, you know, self-publishing may be for you. And there's definitely a matrix to go through in making that decision.
Right, yeah. And we've just more recently actually included self-pub as viable in our dialogue about it, you know, because there's just nothing like having, first of all, the gauntlet, you know, that story has to be great before a traditional publisher is really going to put it out there. But then you get paired with, you know, all of these eyes, and, you know, a traditional publisher has their eye also on book cover design, on title. And there's a reason why they want to maintain control of title and cover, because people do judge a book by its cover. And there's just so many things built in, and there's just nothing like the cred that being traditionally published affords. But I would say now that, you know, as long as you actually, you know, have that education, you educate yourself and you jump through those same hoops that a publisher jumps through, it can be viable. But it took me a very long time to be willing to say that.
Yeah. So, Diana, do you have, maybe a success story of an author who came to you that you can share with us?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would like to think that all the debut authors I acquire are success stories. But, I certainly have a couple. Last year, I published Lara Lana Donnelly's debut, Amberlow, and it was one of my first acquisitions, actually, for the house. So I bought it when I was a baby editor, because I totally love the story. You know, it's very politically wired. It's has beautiful historical aesthetic. It has like characters that are complicated and feel very real. You know, I absolutely fell in love with it when I read it. And I bought it in 2015, and it published 6 weeks after the last election. And the premise of the story is basically a smuggler, a spy, and a dancer trying to survive when their country is being taken over by a fascist revolution. So
and so timely. Mm-hmm.
It was amazingly weirdly timely. And people really latched onto that story. It's gotten a Nebula nomination for best novel. It also got a Lambda nomination for best sci-fi fantasy novel as well. And I'm just so surprised and amazed about the reception of the book. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a beautiful, strong story in its own merit, but the fact that it became eerily culturally relevant was also an element that, again, like, no publisher, no editor can expect to see into the future like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Who could have predicted?
So, yeah.
That's awesome. So if we could leave our listeners, you guys out there in the world, with anything, is that it is possible. It is possible. Traditional publishing is alive and well.
Totally doable.
And
you should talk to us if you have any doubt about that.
Absolutely. The key to it all is like Steve Martin says, just be so good they can't ignore you. And, with Diana, you got to get in front of her at a conference like ours. We had the honor, Diana, of having our participants pitch to you. And I can honestly say, like, you were incredible as somebody who was hearing pitches. I've never seen anybody like you. Our participants would list their comps like you normally do, and you would grill them. You're like, okay, so I totally get how your first two comps fit into that, but your third one is a bit off. Can you explain how that one was chosen? And you just like making them explain. I was like, whoa, she's actually read all three of those comps. And you did it over and over again. It was very impressive.
I think it's I mean, I hope I didn't, you know, make all of them like sweat bullets, because I feel like they all handled themselves very well, actually. So,
well, we trained them well. Authors. You know, we certainly trained them well, but at the same time, it doesn't always go that way with our partners who are acquisitions editors and literary agents, and we're really selective who we bring on board. You know, we want people who really are in the know and, you know, haven't just hung out a shingle. But it was just that you were so engaged with them and really actually looking at what their stories were. And
Yeah.
No, they actually loved pitching to you. I don't know if you caught some of it in the background because, you know, for our audience out there, we were, you know, on video conference, right? And we were doing some major high fives and chest butting. Yeah,
yes.
Me,
yes.
Chest butting. That's right.
No, and I'm really glad, actually. What I enjoy a lot about conferences in general is that not only the opportunity to meet authors and seeing what they're putting out there, but just being on the ground and knowing what kind of conversations that they're having. And I think that what's really important for an author when they're considering like an agent or an editor to take on their project is that to make sure that person has the same vision as the author does the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you know they don't understand like where the author is coming from, or what kind of message the author would like to have their project or the background of the genre even, then you know, then they're not the right fit. And I know for myself, like if someone pitches me something and if I can't be on the same level of them and understand what their project is about, then I know immediately like this is not the right project for me. Like it could be the best written book in the world, but if I don't vibe on it in the same way that the author does, then it does a disservice to both of us, because mm-hmm. then I can't see what kind of vision that they have mm-hmm. for the project.
That's great.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, Diana, thank you so much for your time. It has been such an honor to speak with you today. And thank you for your contribution to the literary world.
Yeah, no joke.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. That's really sweet to say. I'm kind of bowled over a bit. And yeah, I really, really appreciate the opportunity.
If you like the show, shoot us some stars. It's all about the stars, baby. And be sure to share the Calliope Writing Coach podcast with your writer friends. You can find more episodes at calliopepodcast.com. Thanks for listening.